It's such a privilege to be with you every single morning and just celebrate this King that we serve that is so good. And we've got wonderful scriptures like 1 Peter 3, which says that you have always must be ready to explain that hope you've got in you, which is why we love speaking to Apologetic South Africa, who are visiting us this morning. Suzette, good morning.
Good morning.
And then Pastor Ray Chera, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Good to be here.
You're the one that brings Dr. Ray.
Yes.
So maybe you should be explaining who this man is sitting on my right-hand side. By the way, just go to YouTube and to Facebook and check out what he looks like. Who is this man?
Dr. Ray Chera, I might not pronounce his surname correctly. He used to be a lecturer of mine, now a ministry partner of Apologetics SA. Very privileged. Dr. Ray has got his own ministry, Ray Chera Ministries, and he's written a book, Apologetics for the Rest of Us, and he has got courses that we have taken part in, and one on his website currently, Build Your Faith and Witness. We have the privilege of him teaching at our Bible college full time, and he became a friend, but he's a brother in the faith as well.
And as a man, the normal guy at home, to introduce yourself.
I'm a father of three children. We did lose one of our children some years ago. They're all adults. We have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. My wife and I have been married 52 years next month, October.
Oh, wow.
I know I don't look that old, do
I? No, absolutely not. Never. Yeah.
And we just passed 50 years in ministry, June 30th of this year. So I've done everything from pastoring, planting churches, leading a small denomination, an assembly of churches, a group of churches, and teach. I teach at conferences, things like this at Bible colleges and so on, do youth group meetings. So I do a fair bit of traveling, as well as I'm the teaching pastor at the church that we attend. I started that church about 35 years ago. So we return there, and that's my home church.
You are a communicator. I can obviously hear that, not only this beautiful voice of yours, but to be able to teach in a way that people actually understand, you need to be someone who can communicate with a normal person. Was that something that you learned by doing it, keeping on doing it, or is this something that's just in you?
I learned from, I was in the military for 3.5 years and in a leadership position, grew to a leadership position, and I had to learn how to instruct men and keep them alive, basically. And I think that was the beginning. But when I became a Christian, I listened to a few people, and I learned that if people aren't learning, then I'm not teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really honed down how do I really communicate to these people where they're learning, because that's what I want them. And I just don't want to give them information. I want to see them the formation of information, that they would change their lives because of it. And it started with loving people. In order to communicate effectively, if you don't love the people you're talking to, more than likely they're not going to listen to you. But the love is going to speak to them through your words. And I think that's something that is a gift of God once you submit to Him. And that's the way Jesus talked to people. He loved the people He talked to, so I didn't find that I could do anything less than that. And
sure, that's a huge and a valuable lesson to learn for any communicator, that if you don't love the people, it won't be effective.
And I go to the place where I say, if you don't love them, you don't have the right to talk to them.
You're right.
No matter what you're saying to them, if you're admonishing them, just encouraging them, exhorting them, you have to love them. And so I ask God for that love every time I stand before an audience or sit before an audience, that I want to love these people. And the Afrikaners that I speak to, they tell me that one of the most important things I do for them is I learn their names.
Yes, it is a big one.
I was surprised by that. You know, because I thought, who wouldn't want to know their names? You know, like, you're going to talk to them, why not? There's not a great many of them. I can learn all their names by the end of the day, or in 2 days I can know them all.
Or you can just say, no, I'm not good with names, and then, you know, have a back door for not doing it. So it is important.
It makes it personal, and the young people certainly enjoy that. They rise to that. You know, they'll respond to you.
And they feel seen.
Yes, exactly. Identified.
So if you say you've got to love the people, what does that practically mean? So this is a practical way to their names, but what do you, is it... I mean, you can't have the feeling. You don't know them yet.
No. And the other thing I do is I ask them why they're in Bible college. So I want to know something about their past. And I tell them it's okay to tell me I don't know. They just feel like God told them to come, but they don't know why they're there yet. And I think it's showing interest in people that really warms their heart to you. You know, once they know you care for them, they start to care about what they're learning, is the way I would say it. And they respond to me. I have, I started coming to the Bible college in 2016, I believe. So that's 8 years ago. And I still have students that I meet with every time I come to South Africa, to Pretoria.
That aren't studying anymore.
Not studying anymore. They've gone off into business or ministry or some vocation. But yesterday I was with three of them. One of them is married, and I didn't know his wife until yesterday. But they'll bring their wives to me or their husband to me. And
that says a lot.
Yeah. It's a privilege. I just see it as something that is not normal. I don't think it happens just generally to anybody. God gives me favor with them because... Where I come from in America and Afrikaners are very different people. My background is bilingual, bicultural, from an Italian-American background. Of course, Afrikaners are very different people, you know, here in South Africa. But we get together. We click. We coalesce because of God's love and the privilege I have. I really believe God called me to come to South Africa and minister. And I think the proof is in the people that I continue to relate to.
It does take a while for people to start getting honest about their doubts. And I have found that apologetics covers many times the questions start repeating because I've been wondering whether those are the questions that have come out in the conversations that then make you want to answer those specific ones.
Yes, I think eventually they do. I think as people start to get honest about what they doubt, they'll ask questions about certain things, about practices or things of that nature, or problems that they go through, difficulties that they go through, and they start to get honest and what's the biblical answer for that or the practical answer that it should be both. But I think that's what opens people up to speak to you and to really share their heart. And when I first went into ministry, I really didn't want to be a traditional pastor. What I saw of what, this sounds terrible, I know, but I didn't want to just do the work of what pastors are trained to do. I wanted to do what Jesus did, if that sounds simple enough.
Okay.
I wanted to care for people. I wanted to meet them where they were. And I wanted to let them into my life as well as me get into their life. Where in my background, again, in Christianity, the traditional pastor had a guard against letting people too close to them.
A little distance.
Yeah.
The safe distance.
They wanted
distance.
To keep a safe distance. Mm. And I saw that Jesus chose the 12 in Mark 3:14 to be with him, that he gave them permission. Those 12 could be with him. And we know Jesus had a lot more followers, but these 12, they had the privilege of living with him. And so my wife and I agreed that that's what we would do with the men and women that God gave to us, that we felt we were going to impart something of life to, and we let them be with us. They let us see how we treated our children, how we treated each other, how we responded to difficulties, because, you know, when you have children, you can't make things all good all the time.
You're hopeless behind your doors. The rest of us are perfect.
We've had young kids who've done real kinds of, when our children were young, they did things that would be quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, and so now what do? You know, do you pretend that it didn't happen? Do you try to cover it up? Do you scold them? What do you do with them? And we let other people see this is how we treat our children. Mm-hmm. And whether it was good, bad, or we let them see that we're human just like them. We're as imperfect as everybody else is imperfect. But
that does give you authority when people see how you live in Jesus.
Yes.
To when they answer questions that don't have clear-cut, nice and academic answers necessarily.
Exactly.
Like this one that you're answering. I mean, who made God? Right. Mm-hmm. There.
Yeah. And
how do you even answer that?
Yeah, for children, that's usually one of the first questions that they'll bring up to you when you talk about God created. You want to read to them some things in Genesis, how God made everything. And any child who thinks, even in a little bit, will say, well, who made God? And now you've got to explain eternity and infinity and things like this to a child, which is not the easiest thing to do. So I think when my first son asked me that question, I really didn't have a good answer because I hadn't thought past it too far. But of course, through the years and going and getting a master's degree in apologetics and then a doctor of ministry in the same field, I think I have better answers. It's now the struggle is to break it down in a place where I can say it to them. You know, what I generally use is there has to be a first cause. Something has to start it all off. And you can't just keep going backwards. And I explained to them as a train. We have some very long cargo trains in America that are miles. They seem like they're a mile long, yeah. And they have two engines in the front. But you just can't have one train all the way in the back that's pulled by the train in the car in front of them, that's pulled by the car in front of them. You can't keep on adding cars on to infinity. You have to have one that's pulling the whole thing. Mm. And that kind of speaks to them because especially boys see the train. They see the action of the train. So that helps you explain eternity or God being the first cause of everything, that he doesn't have a beginning nor an end for that matter, and that he's the one who causes everything to happen. He's the primary cause of all creation. And they kind of get that. And so that's where we go to with that when we look at an eternal being who always is, always was, and always will be.
That fries your brain right there.
Yeah. Mm. But they get the picture, and it's okay to not understand the mystery of God. Once we lose the mystery of God, we really lose something of his essence because our human brains cannot contain all that he is.
But isn't that the frustration of apologetics when you start speaking to non-Christians and who don't want to believe and you want to quantify everything and academically you want to explain things in a way that is irrefutable?
Yeah.
But the faith aspect of it is a wall.
I mean,
how do you get past that?
I think it's just the accumulation of evidence. I think it's when you connect the dots for people that helps them grasp it better. You know, it's kind of like that old thing you do when you're a child and go by the numbers and connect all the dots together. And you might be able to see some shape when you look at the dots by themselves, but when you start to connect the dots, it starts to take shape for them. And some people get it right away, and some people it takes a lot more because they'll introduce other things like, well, if God exists, why does evil exist? If God could crush evil, why do we still have it? That's my second topic on the weekend.
Mm.
And we have to explain then what evil is. Where did evil come from? If God created everything, why did he create evil?
Yeah.
God didn't create evil. Evil isn't the thing. It's the absence of something.
Exactly.
And that's
the candle in the dark room, that wherever the light is not shining is darkness, and darkness is not a thing.
Yeah, and for it's like rust. Rust doesn't exist without a host. You don't have the absence of metal unless it becomes rusted.
Huh.
But rust doesn't, you can't find a pile of rust somewhere. It has to have a host to deteriorate.
To eat.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a good one. I must remember that one.
Yeah, and so evil is anything that's opposite to the will of God.
Yeah.
So God made everything that was good, and good made incorporated obeying God as Adam and Eve. So when they disobeyed, evil enters into the human race, but of course they're tempted by Satan, who also refused to obey God. So evil becomes the opposite of what God intends for us.
Yeah.
So if humans are supposed to have ears to hear and you have deafness, we could call that evil because it's a privation. It's something
it's
that...
It's a lack of.
Yes.
Good. Lack
so
of God.
So it was meant for this, but now being deaf or blind becomes an evil. It doesn't make the person evil, but it means that the inability to hear or to see, that we could say is not what God intended.
Okay, well, now you're just opening another can of worms. Let's go for that one. I want you to speak to South Africa. You've got the microphone, 400,000 people listening. You are in South Africa. You've got this heart to share the love of Jesus Christ. If I give you the mic in a minute, what would you say to this country?
I would say that we all live in a world of politics and economics. We live in class struggles between people, racism and all these things. And there are many political ideas or that you think you can create something. But we are in the mess we're in, because in the United States, we're in quite a mess right now. And I think we have... The problem that we have is only solvable by one thing, and that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not just forgiving our sins, but giving us wisdom and giving us understanding and the kind of love that will overcome all the differences. You know, everybody, if you listen to, in America, I'm sure you have it here, if you listen to any politician or political party, they're presenting something of a utopia if you elect them.
Absolutely,
You're going to be relieved of all these things. I'm the person to elect to do that. Well, where do they get that idea of that life should be better from? Why do humans think this way? Why do we think that we should be stress-free and problem-free in our lives or have enough to always supply ourselves? Where does that come from? Well, it comes from something God put in them. That, like C.S. Lewis said, we're not made for this earth. There's another life for us to live. And we'll only find that life in Jesus. In America, I've learned to say that the kingdom of God does not arrive on Air Force One.
You know? How's that for a post? That's true.
Yeah. It only arrives when the church will do its job and live the life of Christ and speak the words of Jesus to the church, to the culture. And it's not a white religion. It's not a Mideastern religion. It's a universal religion because God is the God of everything. And through Jesus Christ, we find the peace that gives us understanding and clarity of life, and so we find our peace there, and we find our future there, as well as how to deal with things here on the earth.
The fruit of the Spirit can change a country. Our time is up, so I just want to ask you, Suzette, just tell us about the conference people want to attend.
30th and the 31st of August this year, 2024, it is in Milbarton. Please have a look at our website, apologeticssa.co.za.
Apologetics with the X thing or what?
No.
Like the actual spelling.
Actual spelling Moi with man. SA, please.
Apologetics SA, go Google it. Thank you for your time. I truly
You're
appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.